Well, good morning and welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. We are glad to have you here. I've lost count of how many episodes this actually is.
Episode 943.
There you go. We've been doing this a while now. We are really glad that you are here with us, though. We have Adam here today as normal, but Josh, our fellow compadre, is out to Colorado doing some really cool stuff out there this week. It's not bad out there in Colorado. Yeah,
it's a tough gig, man.
Yeah. I don't remember where specifically you went. Is it?
It's Estes Park.
Estes Park?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's some good stuff right there.
Have you been to Estes Park?
I have been out that area. Mm-hmm. I've never been like town Estes Park, but we've driven around some of that area over there on a day where we went out and did some skiing.
Rocky Mountain National Forest stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Colorado is very pretty.
It is gorgeous.
So you've been out there many times.
Yes.
Some of the most pretty spots you've ever seen.
Yes, for sure. Just gorgeous out there, whether it's Estes Park, whether it's Breckenridge. And it's just gorgeous, 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 gorgeous. But probably the prettiest place I've ever been is out in Peru.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, driving through the Andes Mountains. Mm-hmm. I was like on a train ride from, I can't remember what city it was, but got a chance to go to Machu Picchu and
got to catch them all.
And the train ride there through the Andes Mountains and all those other things was just like, it was remarkable. And I remember just like audibly just saying to some of the guys I was with, it's like, this is nuts. This is the same planet that like we all live on this planet. And right. this stuff actually exists out here.
Yeah.
Just remarkable in its beauty. What about you?
Yeah, that's cool. Last come to mind, Colorado is one of them. Top of Pikes Peak. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty cool experience.
Did you hike it?
No.
My dad did.
Yeah.
I was like 8 or 9 years old, and we went out there, and dad hiked it.
There's another thing in Colorado Springs that I've always been intrigued to try, and it's the incline. Have you ever heard of the incline? Mm-hmm. So it is basically 1 mile of stairs.
Oh,
straight
gosh.
Up the side of a mountain.
Ugh.
And it's like a really popular thing for
five people.
For runners and stuff like that. I bet you, talk about him while he's not here. I bet you Josh has heard of it. If he's been to Colorado Springs, he's probably done it. And if he hasn't been to Colorado Springs, he probably wants to do it.
Yeah. Oh, guaranteed on the wants to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if he had never heard of it, just by you saying that,
he's like a mile
upstairs?
Upstairs, yes, please.
That sounds like a great day.
You can't trust stairs, though. They're always up to something. to Colorado Springs, top of Pikes Peak, Garden of the Gods area.
Garden of the Gods is fantastic.
Super great. Guatemala as well, to throw in
I never got to go to Guatemala.
Guatemala is very, very beautiful. It's mountainous, which I wasn't expecting.
So what range would that be?
It's also like really, really green.
What range of mountains would that be?
I have no idea.
Well, good thing we'll
find it out. One of the things that was cool about Guatemala that I didn't expect to see was like full banana trees. Like there were banana trees out there where like there were just bananas growing off of them by the bunches.
Yeah.
And it was really, really cool looking because I had never really, imagined in my head what a banana tree would actually look like.
Yeah.
And so to see them just like blooming with so many bananas was pretty cool to see.
Were they organic?
I don't know. They weren't separated into two different spots at the Kroger grocery aisle. So
were they on sale?
Yeah. That was pretty. Yellowstone for sure. Probably not anywhere in the Midwest.
You're not going to say anything in Kansas?
Yeah.
Outside of Arrowhead. Well, Arrowhead's in Missouri.
So. Arrowhead's in Missouri. That is one of the prettiest places you ever seen, though.
It's gorgeous.
You think they're ever going to do anything to it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, Andy Reid on his Zoom call this week, they were talking about how like they did like a NFL Players Association poll, and I think like the Chiefs locker room came in like 29th out of 32 teams or something of that nature. And they asked him about it, and he says, "Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense to change anything that you're going to be leaving soon."
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of like a little nugget he just kind of threw in there, just like, "Oh, what's this mean?"
Yeah.
So I think what'll happen is once the Royals get their downtown stadium built in the next couple of years,
New Arrowhead will go
where Kaufman is.
Gotcha.
That'd be my guess.
So. Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I have no idea what mountain range it is in Guatemala.
Yeah. You're on it. So those are some of the prettiest places. What about like a fun place?
Fun place?
What's like one or two of the most fun places you've ever been?
I'm not that fun, Luke. That's not true.
Don't sell yourself short there, Adam.
Yeah, no, I really am not that fun. So, I mean, like Disney World's a ton of fun. I like amusement parks.
Amusement parks. You guys go to Universal.
Yeah, we did last year. For Jaden's senior year, we got an annual pass to that. So we haven't done that since that ran out. But yeah, I mean, they're just fun places. I mean, there's a ton of people there.
Sure.
What's
the appeal for you? Is it mainly coasters? Like, are you a coaster guy?
I like roller coasters. The older I get, the fewer I can do in a day. But I think it's just, I just enjoy hanging out with my wife, my kids, and just seeing them having a great time.
Yeah.
For me, it's more about like food experiences and that's more what I'm into than anything. But yeah, because like a roller coaster, like I can ride it once in a day and it's like, okay, I'm good.
I'm good there. But what are some of the food experiences at Universal?
Like, what was the thing? They had like the churros were pretty cool. I mean, still just a churro, but it's just like, it's a giant.
It's different because it's in the amusement park.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, like we were there on Thanksgiving Day. And so just having like the world's biggest turkey leg, kind of thing, you know, it's just always just kind of fun. And it's just the weird things. It's not like stuff that you want to eat all the time, but you know, it's like the great big pink frosted donut from the Simpsons or, the butterbeer from Harry Potter, sure. Those kind of things.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of fun to be able to do that. And I hate getting them because they're so expensive. So it's mostly you just like looking at them.
Yeah.
It's like, man, that'd be a really big donut to eat, but I'll let somebody else pay for that.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And well, then the other thing too, I'd say is like most fun is just like getting a chance to go to, you know, football games or those kind of things.
Yeah.
Is a ton of fun.
Those are a lot of fun.
Yeah. As long as they win.
Yes.
Then it is not.
It is a bummer when they lose. So I did two. I've been to two Chiefs games while I was up in Joplin. And one of them was with my dad, and we beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is while Alex Smith was still playing.
Okay.
So I can't remember if it was the year before we had drafted Patrick Mahomes or the year after, but it was still Alex Smith was the starter. And then the other one was a Thursday night football game against the Chargers.
Oh yeah, that one.
And they went for two with like no time left on the clock and beat us. And
it's like 29-28 or something.
Oh my goodness. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking to be in the stadium at that moment.
Makes for a really long drive. So like the game we went to 2 years ago was the Tennessee game in Nashville that like we just the Chiefs just did not show up. It's like they should have just stayed in the hotel. I think that it would have been a better experience. And so, I mean, it was so bad that we left like with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, because we were just getting destroyed and blown out. And you want to talk about a long ride home and just everything.
That's 4.5 hours.
Yes.
From Nashville. Just
awful. Awful.
All right. So there you go. So most fun times in our lives are watching sports and being at amusement parks and eating food. Man, food is a good one for me. Like I can tie, and I think there's some science behind it, but I can tie like memories to tastes of food and smells of food. So good.
Oh yeah.
So good. But anyways, this is a sermon podcast, not a food or Chiefs podcast. So let's jump into your sermon from yesterday. We're in part two of Difficult People. The overly needy person.
Mm-hmm.
First question that we have is just who is the most overly needy person on our staff?
Yeah, let's
just
go.
Kidding. No, I'm go. Don't answer that question. All right. So jump in and just give us a recap of what was said.
Yeah, no, we are just working through this idea, difficult relationships and difficult people. So the overly needy person is just that person that is just always. Just kind of a draining person is really what it is. They're the person in the hallway that whenever you see them coming, you go to the restroom, even though you don't have to. You just like jump into that room or you just like dive out of the hallway because you're like, you know that if a conversation starts with them, it's going to be long. You're going to walk out of that just going, oh, my word. And so it's just like a lot of needs. It can be emotionally need. It can be know, financially needy. And so it's just learning, how do we deal with people like that? The struggle, which hopefully we're able to kind of paint a picture of it, is like the problem is we're all Christians.
Right.
And so we are kind people, loving people. We want to help people out. And so it's like learning how to be able to do that with difficult people in our lives like that. And so, it's a really, really, really tough one, because it's like, it's about setting boundaries. It's about just taking care of yourself and knowing how best to handle it. So hopefully it was helpful. Hopefully it was encouraging. Hopefully it was clarifying and those things. Anything for you that kind of just...
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting that second sermon in the series, and both sermons have more or less started with kind of a disclaimer.
Yeah.
Right? Last week it was, hey, we're talking about criticism, and here's the disclaimer. There actually is a positive side to criticism.
Absolutely. Right?
So, and this week, and we're kind of talking again about overly needy people, and you're mentioning that same thing. It's like...
Yeah.
Disclaimer, we're not giving you a pass to be a jerk.
No.
Right? Like, because that's not the call of Jesus.
No.
But we are trying to just navigate this tricky conversation about how we truly help beyond the moment, the person who continuously is in need after need after need after need,
yeah.
whether it be that emotional or financial or, you know, situational. I don't know. So I think it's interesting. And so looking forward to next week. And
I don't know that on, know if on manipulative people, there's actually going to be a disclaimer.
Yeah. Cause that's just taking it.
Yeah. You'll be preaching on hypocritical people.
Yeah,
I guess that we could, there's a little bit of a disclaimer on hypocritical, because I think that label gets thrown around a little too,
it gets
freely.
Thrown, yeah. It's loose.
Yeah.
The phrase hypocrite is a lot more loose than it needs to be.
Yeah, because we call anybody who just like doesn't act 100% consistently hypocrite.
A hypocrite.
That's like,
and,
that's not,
and really,
what
there's this idea, and we're getting 2 weeks ahead of ourselves, but there's this idea that hypocrisy is the idea of not practicing what you preach. And sure, like that's a part of it. But the whole idea of hypocrisy, especially as Jesus uses it in the New Testament, has nothing really to do with that. Like it's all about the role playing. It's all about the faking. It's all about the secret insecurities that are within us, right? So there could be some disclaimers there. But anyways, for today, specific with overly needy people, I just thought that disclaimer was helpful because we don't really want to say, don't help.
Right. We have to have a growing heart for the poor. We need to have a heart for the outcast. We have to have a heart for people who are in need. We should be looking at every resource that we have, you know, is God's resource in the first place. So how can I use it to help other people? So that is the disclaimer. We're not talking about that. We're talking about how do we deal with those people who are, one of the phrases we used there was, they're relational vampires. They're emotional vampires. They just suck the life out of you.
Yep.
How do you deal with those? So that's really where we're dealing.
Yeah, and if you're listening, like I think you know the people we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not not that hard to figure out. We've all got them in our life because, once again, difficult people are kind of
they're everywhere,
unavoidable. So we don't want to say don't help, but we want to be wise in how we deal with those who are constantly in need. And so before we jump into specifics, just let's try and get some stuff out of this. What are some first thoughts of how we can walk that line of not dismissing the fact that we are kind people that need to help people who are in need, but also that line of making sure we use wisdom and discernment in that?
Well, and I think that's the key word. I think that learning to walk the line is learning wisdom and discernment.
Okay.
And so it's learning to be able to ask God for those two specific things on a daily basis. You know, one of the prayers I pray on a regular basis is, you know, like for wisdom and discernment. And just kind of the tagline that I have along with it is, you know, command me what to say, how to say it, when to say it, when not to say it. And it's also just like, help me to know what to do, not to do, when to do it, all those things. And so it's just kind of learning to be able to look at that. And it is just learning to ask the $64,000 question, is this really going to help them?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this really, in the long run, is it going to hurt them?
Yeah.
Because helping people, there's a great book, and we didn't reference it in the message, I've never read it. I've read summaries of it. I know you read it. Yep. But it's just like whenever helping hurts.
Yep.
Because there are ways that we can try to help people and we end up actually hurting them. Mm-hmm. And we're getting off topic a little bit here, but like in some of my research this week, I was reading a story of a guy who found out in his church that there was a family that was in need for Christmas gifts. And so what he and his wife did is they just went out and they bought, you know, several hundred dollars worth of Christmas gifts for that family and they gave it to him. And he's like, man, we felt so good. But the husband of that family that they gave to just completely got turned off to church.
Yeah.
Because he felt emasculated.
Yeah, 100%.
And he felt like, I can't provide for my family. This church just showed me up. And
yeah, of course you'd feel defeated.
Yeah, and so he felt defeated. And so it was just like, oh, man, so what we could have done instead was just went to, you know, Larry, whatever the guy's name was, and just said, what can you do?
Sure.
You know, I can do $100 for Christmas presents. Okay, great. Would it be okay if we came alongside of you and gave you another and did another $100,
right,
you know, for that?
Yeah.
And just be able to try to not hurt the guy, but be able to help him. And so
right.
I think that's the wisdom and discernment that we're trying to figure out. It's like, what are we doing? How are we actually giving people what they truly need in a way that doesn't end up harming them or hurting them and helping them be able to move towards a different stage of life.
Right. And I'm, you know, just thinking about the overly needy people, like the overly needy person who constantly needs attention from you.
Correct.
Are you really helping them meet their greatest need and desire by giving them the attention all the time?
Correct. No.
No. The person who is financially in need.
Yeah.
Are you really helping them meet their deepest need and desire by constantly bailing them out?
Right.
Not really. And right. Not saying that those aren't two things that are good to do. Again, wisdom and discernment is the right way. But we want to make sure that our helping isn't hurting them and that our helping isn't enabling.
Yeah, I think that's a key word.
Same sort of lifestyle.
Yeah, are you keeping the cycle going?
Right. So those thoughts excited to jump into. We turned to Acts chapter 3 is where you went yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Love that story. I think it was a great one to use for this idea. Talk to us a little bit and just recap that story of Acts chapter 3. And then we'll kind of jump into some more good stuff.
Yeah, so Peter and John are there, and there's this guy that was born lame that was just there every day. The only way that he was able, the only way he made a living was by begging, crying out for alms. And so he had some friends who I think you could say weren't really helping him because
sure.
They weren't,
right.
You know, they weren't helping him. They were doing their best by trying to get him there, but there was no way that like true restoration was taking place. Now, to be fair, his friends probably couldn't have said the words in the name of Jesus. I tell you, get up and walk.
Right.
So he's asking for money. Peter and John are like, bro, that ain't got what we have, but what we do have is this. And let us not give you relief. Let us give you restoration.
Yeah.
And they restored him. Guy gets up and starts walking around. And so it's a fascinating story. I love it just from the standpoint of Peter and John are giving the guy not what he asked for. It's what he didn't even think to ask for and what he truly needed.
Yeah. And so that's the key is we're not going to give you what you think you need. We're going to give you something better.
Mm-hmm.
So once the man receives the healing and the restoration, what changes for him now?
Right. So now he's up, he's walking, he's leaping, he's praising God. He goes into the temple and starts to praise God. I would like to think that he went and got a job.
Sure.
You know, it's like, hey, I haven't walked my entire life. I got some work to get done and I don't have to sit here and just beg.
Yeah. He doesn't have to go back tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like tomorrow, he doesn't have to have his friends carry him to the gate. So he can beg again.
Yeah. He can go wherever he wants.
Beg. He can walk there himself now, exactly, you know, but he now has restoration. He's been, you know, pulled back into these opportunities for him, to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so it's just really, really cool. Love the story. Love that line that you gave. Peter gave him a hand up instead of a hand out.
Yeah.
And so thinking about just needy people we encounter, how can we, rather than a handout,
mm-hmm.
and we're not saying don't ever give handout because sometimes the wisdom and discernment will lead you to,
yeah,
that's a good thing. But instead of always being the handout, how can we give a hand up to the needy people in our lives?
Yeah, and I think that that's where we kind of went into the idea of we want to be strategic. And so whenever we're helping, we're going to be strategic in this. And the easy thing to do for Peter and John would have been to just throw a couple of coins in the cup or whatever it was that the guy had.
Yeah.
That'd have been the easy thing to do.
Right.
But they took the extra step and they did the more difficult thing of, well, let's actually give you, your legs back. And help me remember, Luke, I should remember this. Don't they kind of get in trouble for that?
Yeah,
they get called before the Sanhedrin because of this.
Yeah, because that's the first time that there's kind of any threats that are pushed out to them. Well, because if I'm remembering right, Acts chapter 3 happens, they heal the guy, and then that leads into an opportunity for them to preach a little bit.
Yes, they do.
And so then the preaching becomes the problem that the Sanhedrin has. And so they pull them before, be like, if you don't cut this out, then we're going to get you.
Yes.
And then they go and they're like, okay, well, we'll just pray for boldness.
Yes.
In Acts chapter 4,
we'll,
right?
We'll do so, even more. Yeah, he preaches a sermon from verse 11 all the way through the end of the chapter, and then it is chapter 4 to where they get called before the Sanhedrin, and they give them the...
Don't do it anymore. And so then the disciples go and they meet with everybody, and they're like, hey, let's pray that we would be bold so that we can do this more. And the ground shakes because of their prayer, and then they go and they do it more, you know?
Exactly.
So it's just incredible that even, you know, to think about it even from the perspective of the helper, right? So Peter is the person who's calling him up, and that even leads to opportunities for Peter to then make Jesus's name famous, to further the kingdom in more circles than whatnot. If Peter does not, if Peter just hands the coins off.
Yes.
Then he doesn't have the opportunity to preach.
Correct.
Because no one's going to care what he has to say.
Exactly.
But because he says in Jesus' name, go ahead and get up and I'm going to bring you that restoration. Now people want to hear what he has to say.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden kingdom dominoes fall.
Yeah.
And so not only, not only can helping someone by giving them a hand up instead of a hand out, give them what they really need, it also could probably place you in a position for an opportunity to make Jesus famous.
Exactly.
In other contexts, in other ways. So just love that story.
You know, something that I was, so just as I was looking this up again, just to remind myself, verse 11, so of chapter 3, it says, so while he clung to Peter and John. So this guy that they just healed.
He's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere. He's just hanging on to them.
Yeah.
Peter, a crowd starts to show up, and so that's what Peter takes the chance to address. I just love that picture.
Yeah,
it's like this dude is just like so overwhelmed and so happy. He's just like, I don't know if clung means hugged or anything like that, or maybe he's like, dude, I don't know if I can trust these legs.
Maybe he was the thorn in Peter's side.
yeah. But I just love it. He's a clingy guy. So he is a needy person.
So here's kind of a fun question. You chose Acts chapter 3, which I think was great choice, if not the best choice, to kind of demonstrate this idea. Are there any other examples from the Bible that you can think of just about how people have done or demonstrated this idea well of like not necessarily a handout, but a hand up, and not necessarily immediate relief, but constant restoration?
What chapter is it? It's in John. It's the healing of the guy at the pool of
Siloam.
Is it the pool of Siloam?
Yeah.
The guy that's just laying there he's waiting for the water to be stored.
Siloam is the pool that means sent, and it's the pool that the blind man washes in.
Yeah.
So the pool, the guy, is it Bethesda? Pool of Bethesda? Is it the pool at the YMCA?
It's the pool. I think it's the pool of Bethesda.
Bethesda, I think, is right. So yeah. Jesus goes, and there's a guy there who's waiting, and he's lame. And
John 5.
Yeah. So the whole idea is there's this pool. If someone can get in it, they might be healed. But they've got to be like first in it.
Yeah.
And this guy's lame.
He's such a whiner. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't stand that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I preached on that years ago, and that was one of the things that just kind of stood out to me. It's like, this may be one of my least favorite people in the Bible. Like,
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's just a whiner, man. And so he's just a big baby. He's just kind of sitting there and, I'm trying to look it up real quick. So give me just a second here, but, cause John 5, Yeah. Because it's in John 5, verse 6, you know, this guy's been laying there and Jesus comes up to him and he's like, do you want to get well? And the guy's like, I can't. I got nobody put me in the pool. Nobody put me in the pool when the water bubbles up. Somebody else always gets ahead of me. You know, it's like he has Jesus standing right there, you know, and he's like, do you want to get better? And it's like, I can't. And it's just like, I just can't stand him. He's just a whiner. Because then too, it's whenever he gets healed, it happened on the Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders are upset about it. And they're like, you can't do that on the Sabbath. Why do you have your mat in this? You know, why are you carrying your mat? And he's like, well, the guy who healed me told me I needed to do that. And it's just like, you little whiner. He's just a sis. I can't stand him. He's horrible. Horrible. I'm sure he's in. Maybe he'll be in heaven. I'm guessing he'll be in heaven. And we'll get a chance to see him. And maybe I'll feel worse about what I'm saying about him today.
Sure.
But it's just a whiny
butt. But you're thinking about that story and Jesus' interaction with him. Jesus does do this.
Yes.
For the overly needy person.
Yes.
For the whiner.
Yes.
What you think you need, I'm not even going to give you.
Correct.
I'm going to give you something better.
Yes.
And bring you to healing and restoration. So that's another good story for it. Of course, if you preached on that one, you know, you might have whined for 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah. But that's okay, because anytime I preach on Jonah, I just whine and whine and whine about Jonah, because I don't like Jonah.
So are there any other stories that you can think of? Off the top of your head?
Yeah, I thought about, and I don't know chapter or verse on this one, but I thought about the story of Elisha and helping the widow and her son with like the oil that, he was able to provide for them and all that sort of stuff. I even, honestly, I thought about the woman at the well just now because we had one of our senior girls preach at youth group last night, and she spoke on the woman at the well. Did an incredible job.
I heard that.
Just did awesome. And just thinking about the interaction that Jesus has with the Samaritan woman at that well, you know, she thinks that she needs just water, right?
Oh yeah, no, that's a great one.
Like, but Jesus is giving her grace and the opportunity to be a part of a community again and all that sort of stuff. So that story comes to mind too. I think Jesus obviously models it well just about any time he does any healing in the New Testament. So, yeah, there's just a lot that comes to mind. And, you know, any time that you want to model Jesus,
it's probably a good idea.
Probably off to a good start. So let's go ahead and jump into your application points. You said what we're going to do is we're going to be strategic in our helping. We're going to use discernment to trust Jesus completely. So let's talk through that first one. What are we talking through whenever we say we're going to be strategic in our helping?
Yeah. So we want to have a plan. We don't want to just react to a need. And because once again, that's the easy thing to do. That's the emotional response. It's not always the wrong response. Okay. Sometimes it's like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to do something here. And I'm going to react to the issue that's there. I think that there are a lot of really good times to do that. We see us, and this is when Americans, we're good at this. You know, there's a flood, there's a tornado, there's a death in the family, there's a house fire, somebody's diagnosed with cancer, you know, and so you see a GoFundMe page gets, you know, started up. And
absolutely.
And so we're good at this one. It feels good. I think it's because it feels good. It feels like we're making a difference. I think that the other reason why we're good at it, on the honest, just being honest, is it's easier. It is so easy to just write a check, to whip out the debit card and to do a GoFundMe page and do that. And it feels good. Oh, man, I'm making a difference. And you are. I don't want to belittle it by any stretch of the imagination. Because you're seeing a need. You're doing a good thing. You see the need. You're meeting a need. And that's good because that's showing that we do care. But that's just reacting to a need. If we're truly going to help someone who's overly needy, who's always and constantly in need, it's going to take a lot more investment.
Yes.
And it's going to be more of a time or an emotional investment into it because we're saying what will really help, not just right now, but in the long term. And so I want to have a strategy to this. And so we've already hit on it. You know, it's like if it's somebody who has constant financial problems. The answer is probably a combination of we're going to help, but at the same time, we're going to say, let's diagnose what the problem is.
Right.
Is it you've just never learned how to budget? Is it that we're living outside of our means? Is it you just don't have a job?
Right.
Is it your priorities are all out of whack? Like, I know that whenever I do premarital counseling with couples, that one of the sections is on, you know, budgeting and these things. Yeah. And one of the questions that gets asked in the process is, do you have a budget? And almost always it is, no, I've never done one, or I've done one, but I don't stick to it.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, well, we need to talk about this. It's like, so how do we, and it's funny because like a lot of times I'm sitting with, essentially I would call them kids, but you know, they're in their 20s and, getting ready to step out on their own for the very first time. And it's like, so here's how you do this. You know, you got to sit down and how much money, like you need to have a budget for food, you know?
And it needs to be higher than what you think.
Yeah. It needs to be higher than what you think. How many times are you going to eat out? How many, you know, what are you going to do? What you need to have a budget for fun. Mm-hmm. Because you've got to have fun. Mm-hmm. You can't just like starve yourself on those kind of things. Cause that's what makes impulse purchases and impulse, trips and all those things take place. And so you just kind of start walking through that. And that's strategy. You're saying, okay, so how are we going to genuinely help them get out of it? You know, with somebody who is emotionally needy, it's like, you know what? We may need to help get you into counseling.
Yeah.
Because there may be some like parent wounds, dad wounds, mom wounds that are like causing some of this.
Yeah.
Instead of just me just like saying, yeah, I'll meet with you for coffee 7 days a week for 4 hours every single day.
Yeah. Or I'll answer the phone every time.
I'll answer the phone every single time you call.
Yep.
And so that's strategic, and just helping them to kind of get the idea or just helping them move past where they are, because it's like, man, there's a deeper need here than just something that's just right here.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think those are really, really practical ideas, right? So someone keeps coming to you for money. It's like, okay, I'm done giving you the next handout, but I am going to give you a hand up, and we're going to sit down and we're going to budget together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or
I'm going to help you write a resume. You know, I'm going to help you.
Yeah. I want to help you increase your income.
Yeah.
I want to help you, get out of debt, all that sort of stuff. And so, super, super helpful on that. Even the emotional side is like, I am not helping you by being your listening ear all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I can help you, by getting you the help that you really need.
Right.
And this is the whole idea that we've talked about, is like a helping hurts, right? So you just keep letting them talk your ear off. Are you helping them? No.
Right.
What you're doing is you're enabling the attention seeking that they, mm-hmm. that they think they need.
Which is why, like for me, and I think everybody on our staff is like this. I don't think any of us have like hardcore counseling training.
No.
We probably took a couple of classes in college and that was about it.
Yep.
But as far as like actual clinical experience or, you know, dealing with some of those things, none of us on staff have that.
Mm-hmm.
So what I end up telling people is, I'm more than happy to sit with you, more than happy to pray with you, more than happy, to listen. But for us to really get you the help that you're going to need, mm-hmm. Here's who you're going to need to go see.
Yeah.
And, that is just trying to help people get to where cause like, somebody could come and talk to me for 3 hours every week for 6 months, and I'd like to think they'd get a little bit better. I'd like to think that.
Yeah.
But, how much more effective would it be if they're like sitting down with someone who's actually trained in how to do this?
Correct.
And that they can say, no, here's let me diagnose this for you right now. Here's what needs to be. Here are some things that you can do. And how much more quickly can they get better and be able to make the progress that they really need.
Yeah, I love that. And that's usually what I tend to do with some teenagers too, is mm-hmm. that anytime a teenager says something to me about, hey, I really am mm-hmm. struggling through something right now, or I'm anxious or depressed or something like that, I'll say, okay, let's meet 1, 2, 3 times.
Yeah.
And after that 1, 2, 3rd meeting of you talking to me for an hour, what I'm actually going to do is pretty much just tell you,
mm-hmm.
has having this 1 hour session a week, has it helped you a little mm-hmm. bit? And if they say yes, I'm like, okay, then you need to go do that with a professional.
Right.
So let's help. Let's figure out what it looks like for you to get that.
Yeah.
You know, because you're right. I took a counseling youth class
mm-hmm.
and I took a psychology class.
Mm-hmm.
And apart from that, the only other training I've got is anything that I've read.
Correct.
Or have done beyond college. And so I'm not the most equipped.
Exactly.
That's okay. I'm okay with that.
Absolutely.
There are other people that are. So I want to push them to that.
Yeah. So that's strategy. And that's just being like strategic with it. It's recognizing what is really it's trying to understand what's really going to help. And so that's strategic. Discernment is looking into this of just trying to understand. And this is more Holy Spirit work probably than anything.
Yeah.
Of just God, help me discern, what is best and what needs to be done here. But I also think that kind of where we were going with the discernment was in the idea of you've got to have some discernment and how much is this pulling out of you?
Yes.
As you're working with and trying to help this person or these people in your lives. And so really just kind of consider Jesus the guy who dealt with more needy people than anybody else in the history of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave out, he poured himself out, he served, he loved, extended grace, listened, all those things. But even Jesus knew his limits. And yeah. If Jesus Christ, Son of God, had limits, then by golly, Adam Turner, Son of Larry, definitely does.
Yeah.
We have our limits. And so if he knew he couldn't go 100 miles an hour all the time, I know I can't go 70 miles an hour all the time.
Yep.
And so he went away and he plugged in, or he unplugged to restore. And so we have to learn to be able to do that as well.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, here's your one for your bingo card, the Chosen episode.
Yes.
Where they do the story kind of early on in the gospel of Jesus just like healing everybody in the Capernaum area.
Yes.
Right? They're coming to him. They're bringing the demon possessed. They're bringing the lame. They're bringing the sick.
Yes.
And they're just like, lining up in the Chosen episode, that's literally how they make it happen. Like, look, mm-hmm. Jesus is in a little tent and there's a line out the door, like at the yep. Butter Dutter, because
yes.
Everybody wants healing and everybody wants ice cream because it's
exactly
good, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's just like one after the other, healing. And mm-hmm. whenever the scene wraps up and Jesus is done,
yep.
Like you could see his face is just like, I'm drained.
Yes.
I'm exhausted. Like, I don't know that I could go anymore.
Yep.
And so there's a little bit of that too. That's just, I love what you're
That's
saying.
The one where Mary takes care of him afterward.
Yeah.
It just made my wife just cry like crocodile tears kind of yeah. thing. Ugly tears, man.
Yeah. ugly crocodile tears.
Ugly crocodile
Crocodiles
tears.
Cry.
I don't know. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that there's so much wisdom to that in discerning. Am I okay right now?
Mm-hmm.
Am I getting, you know, am I overextending myself into other areas? Am I burning myself out? And if so, where do I need to step back? Do I need to get poured into? Do I need to consider joining a group if I'm not a part of one? Do I need
Correct.
To make sure that my rhythms are okay with yep. Jesus? Do I need to take the time? And once I go ahead and do that and get filled back up, then I'm in position to go and really help the people who are in need.
Correct.
But I can't do that if I'm drained.
No, you can't give what you don't possess.
Right.
And so I love the image of a cup. I remember hearing one preacher say one time that it's not my job to fill your cup. It's just my job to empty mine.
Sure. Okay.
So,
yeah, that's good.
And so, but I can't empty mine if it's empty already.
Right.
And so it's just continually making sure that our cup is full, as full as it can be. And every one of us has different capacities and holds different amount. But just like, okay, if I'm going to pour out what I have, if I'm pouring myself out like a drink offering, as Paul would say, then I've got to make sure there's actually something in there.
Yeah.
To pour out.
You got to.
Yeah.
I love the illustration that you used as well as the airplane oxygen mask.
Yeah.
Kind of idea. Before you put the oxygen mask on anybody else, make sure that you have yours tightly and secured, which makes sense in the middle of a crisis. But do you want to know what everybody who hears that for the first, like hears that on the plane does?
What's that?
Their stomach turns a little bit because they're, you know, 7-year-old kid is right next to them, and you're like thinking, no, in the middle of a crisis, like, I'm doing everything I can for him first.
Yeah.
And so,
but if you're passed out because of a lack of oxygen,
correct, exactly,
your 7-year-old is going down too.
Exactly. And so you've got to be able to make sure that you have what you need, emotionally and spiritually, before you can go out and help the people, that are in need.
And I love the line, that I heard, and I don't know who this is original with, but, that you can't say yes often if you don't say no occasionally.
Yes. That was a great line. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, 'cause we all want to say yes. That's what we want to do. We want to be people who do that, but it's just that reminder. It's like, you've got to say no occasionally.
Jesus said it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
Because he said, let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Yeah.
He's giving you an out.
Yeah.
It's okay to say no.
Yeah. So, yeah, got to unplug to fill ourselves up. And so, but then it moves from discernment to we're going to trust.
Trust, yes.
And that is just the whole idea that we are going to leave the results to him. So Charles Stanley passed away
I saw that.
Tuesday.
Yeah. Yep.
So he had one of his most famous lines is, obey God, fully obey God and leave the consequences to him. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of the idea that we're thinking here is that we're going to do what we believe God is calling us to do. But then we're also going to trust God with the results because we cannot be the one who answers all of that person's needs.
Yeah.
We cannot be, because last time I checked, I looked in the mirror and I did not see God right there.
Right.
I mean, I saw me.
Sure.
And I am a limited human being, and every single one of us are. And so I remember, I don't remember where I heard this, but I've been saying this for years. It's like, you know, they stopped taking applications for Messiah a long time ago.
A long time ago. Yep.
And so the position of Savior has been taken. So it's not a job that I need to try to do. Mm-hmm. And so it is the difficult part of this. Part of the application is that we have to trust the consequences to God in the lives of the people that we care for.
Yeah.
We can't run in and rescue every single time because rescuing isn't always helping.
Yeah.
Sometimes we do have to experience, and the people in our lives have to experience the consequence of their choices.
Yep.
And so that's, I think that's the really difficult one here. You know, that's the Galatians 6, you know, we reap what we sow.
Yeah. Yeah. And just the whole idea of consequences too, like we know that consequences are in so many ways a blessing.
Yeah.
Too. Like, because whenever I have gotten myself into this situation and I'm experiencing the consequences of those actions, that's whenever I know, oh, I don't want to be in this place again.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know I'm going to have to do what I can to help. And so sometimes it is the very difficult thing of the way that you actually help people is by trusting God and then letting them hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
To say, the phrase.
And hoping for people that rock bottom is 6 feet instead of 600 feet.
Correct. Yeah. And so I love that you used the story of the prodigal son as an example, right?
Yeah.
Like a father who let his son go.
Yes.
And who realized the way that I'm going to help him the most right now is to let him go make his mistakes.
Yes.
And then to be waiting for him should he ever come back.
Exactly. He didn't run off to the faraway lands and just say, come on, bro, you got to come back.
I mean, so that's just the question, you know, especially for like the proximity of that relationship and for the overly needy people in our life that we really do genuinely care about. Mm-hmm. How do you get to the point to where you are so patient and trustworthy that you are able to, because of the discernment that you have, just let them go and let them stumble?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I think the reality of change is, and once again, I don't know who said this, but it's just kind of a good thing to remember.
You need to start having a guy that you just attribute all of your quotes that you can't remember who said.
Leroy Brown.
There you go.
Leroy Brown said once, but that we don't change until the pain of staying the same outweighs the pain of change.
Yes.
And that's what this is all about, is understanding that you can go and he could have gone and rescued his son. it would have made the story a whole lot worse. So Jesus did a good job with that.
Right.
But you know, in reality, he could have. He could have sent people to get him and just say, hey, I've heard that you've been living out here in the pigs. This is stupid. You're my son. You don't need to be doing that. You can come back home. And he could have rescued him. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the life change would have been even remotely close to what we assume happens with the prodigal son.
Right.
And so it is that patience and just going, okay, God, I'm going to trust you in this. I'm going to trust you in this. You know, as a parent, it's, God, I trust that you love my kids more than I love my kids. You've cared about them longer than I've ever cared about them.
Yep.
And so I'm going to trust that you're going to do a great work in them. And whenever it comes to these people in our lives that we care about, you know, it's just going, you know what? Okay, God, I'm going to trust that I've done what I can do. I've used discernment. I've used your spirit to guide me, to help in the way that I think is best. But at the end of the day, I'm going to trust that whatever consequences come this person's way, it's going to be for their betterment.
Right.
And so, yes, it'll be painful to watch. Mm-hmm. Yes, I may need to be there to help support and clean up whenever they do hit rock bottom, wherever that is.
Yeah.
But God, me running in interference for them is not helping.
Right.
It's not helping them because they are thinking they can escape this. Is it immutable? Is that how you say that?
I would say so.
The yep. immutable law of you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
And so God, help me to keep my hands off in a situation like that.
Yep. All right. I love that. Bottom line from yesterday. Super good. People in need aren't problems to solve, but people to love.
Mm-hmm.
And then the challenge is pray, God, help me remember that I'm in need too.
Yep.
And that you are always the answer.
Yeah.
Which is what you see Peter display. Yep. I don't have much, but what I do have, I'll give you. And it's
yeah.
in the name of Jesus,
yeah.
who well, is the answer.
And the prayer there at the end too is just the reminder of we're not putting ourselves in a position of superiority over
someone else in need.
It's just like last week, you know, we're not spending 4 weeks just pointing out the errors that other people have and that we're above them.
Right.
It's recognizing I'm a needy person. I love that Psalm 75. But as for me, I am poor and needy. This is who I am.
Yep.
And so on the cosmic scale, we're all needy people.
Yep.
And so God, help me remember that because that's what allows us to be graceful and patient with other people.
Yeah. I love it. Good stuff from yesterday's sermon. Good stuff from today's conversation. And it would have even been better stuff with Josh. I know if Josh was here, we would have saved time with our asking, hey, what chapter is that?
And yeah, and he'd be like,
yeah, that's John 5.
And then like, John 5, yep. verses 1 through 15. That's yep. on page 933.
Here's what it says from start to finish.
Yeah, in the Greek.
But yeah, good stuff today. We'll be in part number 3 next week. We already kind of talked about where we're headed with manipulative people.
Yep.
And so we're going to do what we can to manipulate you into being there.
That's exactly
not really.
Right.
We want you there, though. Let's end today with a little bit of fun. You know, we both are really, really big sports guys. So this will just kind of be a fun question instead of a game to kind of talk through towards the end, and we'll try to hit it pretty quick. Think about sports moments.
Yeah.
Okay? And I think I already know at least two that are going to top yes. for probably both of us.
Yes.
But what are, thinking through all of the sports that you've ever watched
yeah.
from birth to now.
Yep.
Top 5 sports moments of all time for you.
Okay.
So like, you know, a top 5 sports moment of all time for somebody else might be the Michael Jordan flu game.
Right.
I couldn't care less about that. So I'm right. not adding it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
what do you think?
So these are things that we witnessed. Not necessarily in person.
But, things you saw. Yep.
Okay. So I don't know if I'll be able to get to 5. So I think what would be fun is we'll just go back and forth. I'll give you one.
Sure.
And I'm working from the low end of the totem pole.
Ooh, I don't know.
Going to the higher end. I haven't
done that before. Okay.
So these are like I know number 1 and number 2. Okay. I yes. know what those are.
Yep.
But so I would say probably number 5. Okay.
Okay.
Would be the 1988 slam dunk contest between Dominique Wilkins and Michael Jordan.
Okay.
How's that?
This is not at all where I would think you were going to go.
Yeah, that was just amazing. It was just like, I remember watching that, and I was 10 years old, 9 years old.
Okay.
And just watching those two go back and forth and back and
forth. That's the iconic dunk contest where he does the, like, Air Jordan from the free throw line?
Yeah. Okay. He actually did it first in 87 in the Seattle one, but everybody remembers the 88 one.
88 one because of the verse Dominique.
Yes, because of Dominique. So that'd be number 5.
Okay. Okay, cool. Golly, in order, I'd go number 5. This is an interesting one because I never thought that I would throw this one in here, but it was so spectacular for me to watch. Tiger's Masters win in 2019.
That was a great one.
Yeah.
That was a good
one. That was an incredible moment. Yeah. And so
I think we watched that in small group.
That was, here's a little bit of a confession. In 2019, that was right before I came here full time. So I was still a college student in Joplin. That was the last time, that I chose to skip church.
Love it.
On purpose. Because I wasn't sick or anything like that. Cause I was like, oh man, I really want to watch Tiger. I felt bad about it, but it really was just an incredible moment.
Yeah,
like,
it really was.
Oh my goodness. That was awesome. And I'm not like, I watch a little bit of golf every year, like, you know, and, I always watch the Masters, even before I moved out here to Georgia. And I watched some of the others, but that, and like, as soon as I saw Tiger was in the mix, I'm like, and then the way he finished, that was a special one for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know that I'd put that one at 5.
Okay. So number 4 is the, Michael Jordan shot over Byron Russell in the 1998 NBA Finals.
Okay.
I was at Jennifer Curry's house, cause we were not married yet.
Not married yet. Yeah.
And we were down in the den watching that game, and Jordan pulled up, may have pushed off, but he pulls up, hits that jumper, nails it. I jumped up. No, it's a den. It's a low ceiling. But I jumped up. I hit my head on the ceiling right there because I was just so excited about it. So that'd be number 4 for me.
Okay, cool. I'm trying to actually like play back in my mind what that shot looks like. I'm sure I've seen it.
Oh, my gosh. Were you even born?
You said when?
98?
Yeah, I was 2.
Okay.
Yeah, I was 2 when that happened.
Yeah.
So, okay, number 4 for me, I'm going to go 2005 college championship, Texas versus USC, Vince Young's touchdown in the corner.
That was something else, man.
So, yeah, big Longhorns fan. And so I was watching that game with my brother Clark. We're the only 2 Longhorns fans in our family. And so everybody else had gone to bed.
Yeah.
And we woke everybody up.
Yeah.
Because as soon as he scored that touchdown.
Yeah, that was an insane game.
Yeah. That was a.
Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Vince. Yeah, I mean, that was. Yeah,
Jamal Charles.
Yeah. Just nuts.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Okay. Number 3 would be the 2015 Kansas City Royals winning the World Series.
Okay.
Against the New York Mets.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that one.
That was the first Kansas City championship in 30 years. Because 85 was when they last won the World Series.
Gotcha.
And like Chiefs had never won anything.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty special.
Yeah. Cool. There you go. Okay. Number 3 for me, I'm going to go, I'll go with this year's Super Bowl.
Okay.
So
number 3.
Yeah. And some of that is because I've got a lot of Spurs championships to pick from.
Oh my
as
gosh.
Well.
Yeah.
In the NBA world. But yeah, this year's Super Bowl. I think I'm trying to think of, you know, a specific moment. Honestly, it might not even be the Super Bowl. It might be just the experience of watching Patrick Mahomes play on one leg in each of the playoff games.
Yeah.
Like that whole thing.
Yeah, I think
is the moment.
Yeah. So this is my number 2 is this year's Super Bowl. And so I think in that game, it would be either the Tony punt return, or the Tony touchdown to where he was like wide open by 15 yards.
Yeah.
To where it was, I was just having this conversation with somebody just this week. They were asking, how did you feel at halftime? And it's like, not great because Pat was on one leg and it wasn't looking good. But I swear this is the truth. I called my brother and we were talking through the halftime. And it's like, man, this just does not look good. Pat doesn't look good. It's like, but if we can score out of the gate, out of the half, just get one stop and score again, I think we can win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And
we did.
And that's exactly what we did. So, that's number two.
Number two. I'm going to go with a number two on a Spurs one. And I think I'm going to go
Ray Allen jump shot in the corner.
So I was going to ask a follow-up question about maybe a sports moment that keeps you up at night still.
Yeah.
That D4. Would be it for me.
Yeah, D4 offsides.
In 2013, game six, Ray Allen hits that corner three.
On his tiptoes.
On his tiptoes, and then they win in game seven.
Amazing shot.
However, if we had one in 2013, I don't know that we would have had the drive to come back and win in 2014 like
correct.
We did. So it all kind of worked out. I'm going to go 2005 again, Spurs, Pistons.
Okay.
That went all the way to seven games.
Yeah.
Spurs took the championship there. 2 years later, we won it again, and we swept LeBron and the Cavs.
Yep.
In the finals. So that was also quite satisfying. But yeah, that one for sure, I think, is where I'm at.
Yeah. And number one, I'm assuming we were together at that one.
Correct.
Yes.
And I think Super Bowl in 2019.
Yes.
But also WASP.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Right? Like it is WASP is the moment.
Yes.
The Tyreek Hill catch all the way down the field.
Still gives me goosebumps.
Do we have time to run WASP?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
Let's yes, we do.
So, yeah, that for sure tops it all off. Do you have a haunting one? I shared a haunting one.
It would be D Ford's offside.
The
Patriots in the AFC Championship, because we could have theoretically played in 1-2. Well, and then, too, the stupid Bengals game last year's AFC Championship game. Because there's no reason why we shouldn't have been in five straight Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And then nobody would be talking about, would even be remotely debating that,
the best.
That Patrick Mahomes isn't. You know, shouldn't be considered the best quarterback of all time.
Yeah. Cool. Sports are fun, man.
Sports are fun. I'm sure everybody's already tuned out.
Yeah, that's okay. We just got to talk about it anyway.
Yeah, this is our portion of the podcast.
Yeah. Well, we'll wrap it up there and be back next week for another episode of Corinth in Your Car. And then on Sunday morning, man, we'd love for you guys to come out for week three of Difficult People. We're talking about the manipulative person. So should be good stuff from there. From Adam, from Luke, and from Josh, who I know still cares about you, even though he's not here. We're pretty sure. We're grateful that you've tuned in. We hope they have a great week. Peace and grace.
Yeah.